This is Super Yacht Radio.
Welcome to Super Yacht Radio. I have the pleasure today of continuing a topic we've talked many times on this station about, all about sustainability. And I have the pleasure of having Julian Hunter from Mecomia join us today. Julian's going to have a busy couple of months ahead as he's involved in focusing on spreading the message about fouling and biodiversity and the impact it has on our whole marine industry. Julian, welcome.
Hi, good morning. How are you today?
Welcome to the show, Julian.
Good, thanks.
So I know you've sort of started your month at the Southampton show last week, and I believe you had some guests with you to sort of start the boat show season and bring this topic up.
Yeah, no, we started talking about biodiversity and the impact that keeping a clean hull can have on that. And so biodiversity is really, you know, a fancy word for the delicate balance of nature. So obviously, to make sure that boating doesn't upset the delicate balance of nature, one of the things they've got to look after, which they've looked after for hundreds of years, is the hull, to make sure that the hull is not actually carrying fouling or biofouling, as they refer to it. Because over many years, boaters have known, shippers, captains have known, that to keep a clean hull is important because it saves fuel, because it makes the boat maneuverable, and we can make sure that things are going okay there. Also, a clean hull reduces CO2 emissions, because if you've got fouling on your hull, then you get a lot more fuel burned, which obviously costs money, but also you get more CO2 emissions.
It's sort of the drag, isn't it? If you have a lot built up, you just don't have the same drag.
Yeah, and you're carrying more weight. The whole thing is damaging to the vessel's efficiency at operation. But really what the focus has been on over many years is that side of it. And what's becoming clear now is that there's another key important side, and that's what we're bringing. And that's this idea of biodiversity. So if you don't look after the hull properly and the hull becomes fouled, what you can start to do is the vessel starts to act as a little taxi to take organisms that are hitchhiking on the bottom of the boat from place A to place B. And obviously, yachts and boats love to go in areas of natural beauty. So potentially, once the boat and the yacht gets to another place, the organisms can potentially jump off and then start to colonize and generate their own population, which can disrupt the natural population that's already in these areas. And this is really especially important in the time of global warming, where the water temperatures are up slightly, and the ecosystems, as we call them, all the organisms in these sensitive areas, are already stressed. So we're almost generating potentially an opportunity for these invasive species. So what we're saying is it's more and more important these days than ever to make sure that your hull is clean and that the biofouling on the hull is controlled properly, and that there's no, you know, unnecessary transport of these species from across the world.
Yeah. I remember as a kid, Julian, growing up and hearing stories in Australia where they would introduce rabbits for the meat, which then they had no predators, therefore they expanded and they introduced a rat. And they had all these terrible mishaps with introducing animals from Europe or wherever into Australia and realizing the complete disaster, ecologically speaking. And thinking of Australia, I know when boats are going into Australian waters, there is very strict rules about, you know, anti-fouling, making sure the hulls are clean, because they are very sensitive, having had terrible experience with the damage that it can cause. Could I ask, what about other countries? I mean, if I'm going from, say, I don't know, maybe if I'm coming from Europe and I'm heading down to Hong Kong, as I know many boats do, or they head down to the Maldives or whatever, are there any checks by other countries of the integrity of the hulls and the potential for biodiversity upset? Or is it just the Australian Antipodeans that, because of their history, do this? I haven't heard of any other place.
Yeah, I mean, I think this issue is starting to grow. And yeah, in Australia, as you rightly point out, they've had a history of invasive species causing problems like the rabbit and several other examples as well. So yeah, in Australia, you've probably got the most advanced rules and regulations where they are checking the bottom of boats before they get allowed to come into certain ports. Same in New Zealand as well, but also in California. So I think those are the three areas where they've actually got stringent regulations. But this has been brought, I think it's recognized as a global problem. Yeah. So yeah, there is potential for things to be translocated from Europe into Hong Kong. I don't know the species directly, but I'm sure that there are options. I mean, there's the example of the zebra mussel, for example, that came over from Russia into the Great Lakes and disrupted the ecosystem of the Great Lakes massively. There's an example in Europe where the Australian tube worm, trumpet tube worm, I think it's called, was translocated from Australia into the UK and is now causing some havoc down there in the south of England. So it's, you know, it's a global problem, but because it's a global problem, the way that a lot of countries think about it is let's deal with it at a global level. So it goes to the United Nations. And of course, for shipping, boating and yachting, the United Nations of the Sea is the IMO, International Maritime Organization. So that's the organization that's actually looking at this. So they have produced some, so 10 years or so ago now, some guidelines for boat operators and yacht owners on how to manage the underwater hull area to keep it protected from fouling. They're looking again at that now. So they're revising those guidelines. And there's also a parallel project called Glow Fouling, which is actually where they're bringing together people in the industry to share information, share best practice, and promote best practice to make sure that the right solutions are there for boat owners and ship owners to protect their boats and prevent the unnecessary changes in biodiversity.
Looking at the present solutions, you know, looking from paints and the changes that have happened over the past, particularly 5 years, and the other solutions and kind of the pros and cons, because I think that's part of it too, is this delicate balance between putting stuff on that is potentially going to be bad for the environment. However, if it's not effective, then it's also bad for the environment.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the most common way, the go-to solution for preventing fouling on your boat is to use effective anti-fouling paints, which contain a small amount of biocide now to release to prevent anything growing on the surface. Now, they've been the subject of a lot of scrutiny since the late 80s. You remember years and years and years ago, there was a problem with a substance in the 80s that was banned at the IMO level. Since then, countries have been regulating to the point where I would say anti-fouling paints are probably now the most scrutinized group of products on the market. So when I say scrutinized, I mean environmental impact has been scrutinized to make sure that it's the lowest possible, but also to make sure they're as effective as possible. So yeah, anti-fouling paints in the past were subject to a lot of concern. Now I think we've got the US EPA looking at them, we've got the European Union countries looking at them, we've got Great Britain looking at them. Really, they're safe, but they are one solution, the common solution, I would say. But there are other solutions coming forward too. Obviously, manufacturers have been working flat out to discover new ways of preventing fouling that don't involve biocides. So there's, for example, ultrasound is an approach that is used for to prevent fouling, and that's especially useful on niche areas, I think, like water inlets and also on propellers, for example. So what we have is a range of different products, but we have regulators again scrutinizing anti-fouling paints. They're actually probably going the fourth or fifth time to do another scrutinization of anti-fouling paints. And what the concern is in the industry is that if you actually get them so regulated to the point they're not effective anymore, you're going to result in a lot of fouling and then loss of biodiversity. So it's all about a balance. And that's why in ICOMI, we want to try and bring the stakeholders together, including the regulators, to start to talk about this issue and get a plan, and some regulations which actually make sense, which protect the environment, but also protect diversity.
Can I ask a question of you, Julian? Well, obviously I can because we're being interviewed. But we spoke some months back with some people from Seattle. And one of the things that they mentioned to us was that now and again, the boats, they travel up the, yeah, they go into the estuary, they travel up a river into freshwater lakes, and they hang out there for a couple of days. And this has the effect, because your fouling is saltwater fouling, bringing it into freshwater kills off most of whatever is attached to the hull. And from that conversation, I've spoken with a couple of other sailors about, you know, is this something they ever do or they think of? A couple of them knew about it and said, yeah, we do it. But the majority, and I even spoke with one company who do anti-fouling, the majority were like, never heard of it. And thought this was like, you know, an old grandmother's cure all or something. Well, but it's something that people seem to do.
Alternative methods. I think the bigger question is, are they also being scrutinized, whether it's, you know, UV or nonstick or hull wrapping, or do they have the same scrutiny as well for their effectiveness?
Just to go back to your comment about fresh water, I mean, that's actually, like most myths, there's some truth in it and there's some not so much truth in it. The reality is that some organisms that grow on the bottom of boats are so clever, they can actually live in fully saline water and fresh water too, or near fresh water. So you don't kill everything. Maybe you just generate an environment which favors another organism over a different one. So yeah, you'd kill off some things maybe, depending on how long you were there. But actually, would you kill off everything? Probably not. So it would help, but it wouldn't be the perfect solution. And then to go on to your question about other methods have to be scrutinized. Well, anti-fouling paints have probably been scrutinized the most. But other methods, well, they haven't been through the same scrutiny process. I'm not saying that they're bad, but they haven't been through the same scrutiny process. So I think there needs to be a holistic approach, and everything needs to be evaluated,
ultrasonics?
Ultrasonics have been evaluated for an effectivity, so that they have, according to the manufacturers, and of course I leave it in their hands here, they are effective in terms of the scrutiny that you put a chemical in anti-fouling paint through. It's not going to be the same level of scrutiny. But not to say they're harmful, it's just not, it's the way they sit in where the regulations are.
Well, I think one of the positives is that it is a very innovative time. So I'm sure in this area, we'll see a lot of new products. Yeah. I heard about these tiles, these UV tiles that you can put on that would...
No, that's right. There's a huge amount of work going on to generate things for the future. For example, in surface science, there are people trying to create the surface of a shark effect that you can then apply to the bottom of the boat, because of course sharks don't have barnacles on them, generally speaking. So also, yeah, as you mentioned, UV lights. Philips, which is one of the world's biggest manufacturers of UV lighting, are teaming up with coatings manufacturers in a collaborative thing, actually, to generate tiles, as you say, which have got these mini LEDs like embedded in them which generate UV light just at the paint surface, which actually prevents the fouling. So, and there's some pretty spectacular results of that actually coming out. But again, you know, there's a lot of things to be done. You can't spray, you paint them with a paintbrush. You're actually talking about putting tiles on the side of a boat, which is different. But yeah, they are actually on the side of boats now. So they're at a high level. They're getting through the testing process. How long it'll be before they come, I don't know. But certainly you're right. There's a huge amount of research about this whole issue. And it's never been more important to keep these things developing to prevent this biodiversity loss.
I think one of the interesting things that came up as well in the seminar was, although we've talked about this on a global scale and, you know, some of the incidences we've seen, even on a national scale, you know, you can have busy marinas or harbors, and then even, you know, following up the coastline within the same country, but you can still result in changing the biodiversity of more protected or, you know, smaller places.
That was the comment when this issue was first raised. It was, isn't this just a problem associated with internationally trading vessels? Well, So think about the analogy of like a jumbo jet coming in from a different country and landing, all the passengers getting off and going into taxis. Well, the pleasure draft would be the taxis taking all the different invasive species around locally. So you can actually get a spreading of an invasive species that's been brought in by an internationally trading vessel, by the pleasure craft, that take it not only into other ports, but also into the areas of natural beauty. And it's been shown with some pretty good research, actually, in the United States and in Europe, that pleasure craft have been shown to take invasive species right into the sensitive parts and sensitive marinas and parts of the world, which really need to be protected. So it is pleasure craft. It's not an issue just for international trading vessels. It's an issue for everybody who's on the water.
I'm actually surprised, Julian, that we don't have bigger problems than we've seen. I mean, earlier on, you've mentioned...
Says the man in the middle of a pandemic. Where have you been for a year?
In terms of marine biodiversity, because the amount of shipping that goes on, and pretty much from Southeast Asia up in through Europe, yeah, there's virtually no checking of this. I'm surprised that we haven't seen bigger disasters happening. We can remember a few that we mentioned earlier on, but I would have expected this to be
an even bigger issue than it is.
Yeah. Well, like having it is an issue, and there are documented cases of invasions causing problems. It's just because you don't always see it that it's you don't see a change in an ecosystem, and so now they're being documented and looked at, things that have been known to happen. But really, I think in a world where waters are getting warmer and regulations are getting tighter to the point where you may ban effective products, this is the flag we're waving. This is an issue that we have to be careful about and get together and manage about it and talk about it, hence why we're having these conversations.
We had a turtle swim up onto the shores of Donegal last week.
Wow.
And Aer Lingus have very kindly used the opportunity to publicize that they'll fly it home to the Canaries. But
okay, do you have any barnacles on him?
What's he what did he bring in from Africa?
I don't remember seeing it, but it's a sign of the change, because there is a change happening with the Gulf Stream. It's splitting into several streams, and if you're getting a turtle coming up in that, what else is jumping on that conveyor belt as well?
I think to your earlier point, I think we have sometimes the changes can be slow and gradual, and pinpointing the source, whether it was invasive species or it was an invasive species plus warming temperatures, plus pollution, plus it's very complex. So what's happening, for example, in the Mediterranean is not necessarily going to be the same issues as is happening up in the Baltic. Because they have different environmental influences, and
that's right,
which is why I think also, one of the points was that it's very hard to find a one size fits all, because it does have a lot of different influences on it.
Yeah, I mean, what comes over time and time again is the vessel type, boat type, operating pattern, where are you going? So if you're trading in the Bay of Bothnia or the upper reaches of the Baltic Sea, you have a different need for fouling protection, a different type of product than you would if you're operating in the Mediterranean, where the fouling is, growth rates are high because of the high temperatures and high nutrient in the water. So yeah, we need any ruling or guidance has got to take this into account. It can't be a one size fits all. And also, you can use some of these technologies together. So the anti-fouling paint doesn't have to be the only solution you use on a boat. You may want to use an anti-fouling paint on the hull, but then the propeller or the water inlets or the sea chests or the other areas, underwater areas where water gets in on a super yacht, you might want to use ultrasound to actually protect those areas. So it's a combination. I think the manufacturers are not at war here with each other, trying to outcompete each other, really just trying to get together to talk about, how can we do this better together to make sure that the boats and ships are properly protected so we can protect the environment.
Yeah.
And also, when you're saying into the boats, it's also protecting their pockets as well, because it is very expensive. The more fuel you have on your hull, the more petrol fuel you're using.
Absolutely.
That's big money.
Yeah. I mean, that's been the primary driver, I would say, for the past sort of 20 years to keep holes clean is fuel consumption. You want to keep the fuel consumption minimized. You want to optimize your vessel operation. But obviously, as the concerns rose about global warming, people were concerned, okay, if I actually keep my hull clean, I can reduce CO2 emissions, reduce the, you know, SOx and NOx emissions, anything that comes out of the hull. And now we have this other environmental issue as well, which is becoming, was obviously always there, but is now becoming more recognized on biodiversity. And it all really, we need to take a holistic view to handle all of these things together by using the right solutions that work. And it's not really acceptable anymore to operate a vessel with a fouled hull. It's just not good for anybody, whether it be the economic side or for the environment.
Are things moving in the right direction? Are they moving fast enough? I mean, I don't think
anything moves fast enough.
The IMO is great, but it can
other
take,
than a well, pandemic,
it can take years.
Well, obviously, I think, you know, look, there's been a huge focus on climate change, which is absolutely right, and this should continue to be. But I think now the discussion is also saying, well, what about biodiversity? Because everything is related as well. So, yeah, we've got now the COP, the United Nations, talking about all the issues and making recommendations with applying sort of sustainable development goals across the world to governments and industries to ask them to improve. So I think things are moving. Like you say, things globally don't tend to move very quickly, but they are moving in the right direction.
But there
are countries moving in the same pace. I mean, I'm thinking to France, who have put in laws and they're very, very strict about anchoring on the Pasadena.
The seagrass.
Forgive me. Mallorca also is very strict. Other countries, but perhaps less developed countries, which tend to be in the warmer waters, are they paying attention to this? Are they seeing?
Or are they under the blanket of the kind of EU Green Deal? They're moving everything.
I think for this to work, everybody has to.
Countries that are, I guess, less developed in terms of environmental regulation, obviously look and participate in the international stuff like International Maritime Organization. That global fouling project that I mentioned earlier has been driven a lot by some developing countries who want to get a joint global approach which they can participate in. So, but yeah, there is different speeds moving in different parts of the world. But I think in the EU, under the, you know, EU rules, the EU is fairly harmonized in approach. The United States, well, you've got federal rules and regulations there, which are coming. Although from a biodiversity perspective, you have the state of California, which is doing something in advance of everybody else. So, yeah, it is a little bit unbalanced. But I think to take it to a global level and then really push at the IMO and push on the global fouling project to get things working will result in, I think, some good pragmatic regulations which will benefit the environment in most countries as we go forward, or certainly the countries that want to do.
Yeah. And can I just finish off of saying, certainly within the superyacht industry, it is great to see the topic of sustainability being taken, particularly in the past 5 years. There's just been a huge growth between boat shows, between companies getting involved, between, I think, a very personal connection to the sea that a lot of people are really, you know. So when it becomes a kind of community drive as well, I think that makes a difference.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I was associated with the pleasure craft industry about 20 years ago. At that time, it was like, no, there's really no interest. But now you can really feel it. You know, you go to the boat shows and you can see sustainability is on everyone's agenda. There are stands about it. There are movements. And that's why I think it's quite exciting for me as well to go into this area.
It's bad publicity as well.
To drive. Yeah, absolutely.
And a lot of people at trade shows got very bad PR from giving away free bottles of water, single-use plastic. And that stopped.
Right. I have to say, when I went to Southampton on Saturday, my wife said, bring me back as many freebies as you can.
Those days are gone.
No freebies.
No, they're gone.
What's going on?
You don't go home with two paper bags of brochures knickknacks and things that your kids will automatically.
Our kids used to get so excited at
the end of a boat show. Well, what did you get?
Our first one was Monaco. And on the Sunday, I brought my kids to the Monaco show. And when we got in, we walked through into a tent. I gave them each a bag. And I said, right, go do it. Go get it. Get what, Dad? Freebies. What are freebies, Dad? So I brought them up to a desk. I said, look, key rings. You can take one each. Put it in your bag. I went, no. Yes, look, another one. Pencils. So they
did a day out.
Oh, they came home with loads of stuff. The following year, we went back. And each year since, they stopped doing freebies. Companies.
That's right. That's right. And it's probably right.
Absolutely. Because then you'd have like a boat show box and you wouldn't know what to do with it because you'd feel bad. Exactly. You know, well, I should recycle this.
A lot of it would be plastic as well.
Yeah, and it would stick around forever.
If I have my dad hat on, I miss those days.
I miss the odd pen though. It'd be nice to get the odd pen, even if it's
pens are handy.
And the USB sticks that you can never rely on.
Anyway, Julian, thank you so much for joining us today. That was a fascinating talk. And I know you're going to have a busy autumn because you will be representing Ecomia at a few different events this autumn, won't you?
Yeah, we're doing Genoa next week, Barcelona, and then Metz. We're going to have a good panel discussion at Metz in November. And then we'd like to continue the discussion on in Dusseldorf and Stockholm. So we just want to raise, it's like a big holds conversation. We're having a clean holds conversation and we want to get as many people in as we can so that the regulators are not regulating in isolation, that they understand the industries that they're regulating and that the manufacturers are also understanding what people are saying. So we would encourage everybody to get involved in this conversation and say their piece and let's talk about it.
Great.
Thank you very much, Julian. Keep up the great work. And please stay in touch with us. Let us know.
I would. I'll just do that. We'll do. Yeah. And hopefully I'll see you at a boat show sooner or later somewhere.
Who knows?
We'll be the one with glasses looking at instructions of what to do when you go to a show, because by that time I'll have forgotten. Julian, stay safe. Thank you.
All right. Okay. See you guys.
Ciao.
Bye.
You've been listening to Super Yacht Radio. Thanks for being with us.
Super Yacht Radio.